Hello and welcome to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we are in your ears with the brilliant assistance of OldFootballShirts.com. Well, after all the pomp and ceremony in the build-up to last week's match, it all fell a bit flat as we quite simply didn't turn up. And with the trophy very clearly visible in the TV studio, it was very much a case of, have a look and see what you could have won. But it's not over yet. And tomorrow, we get one more chance to secure the trophy. Will it be third time lucky? In other news, one trophy that was lifted at the Amex this week was the Sussex Senior Cup after the under-23s extra time victory over Crawley. And another trophy that we collected this week was the Renfe Trophy as we beat that lot from up the road 2-1 at the Pan Siro last night. And joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are welcome to delighted back. Delighted to welcome back.
Whose teeth have you got in today?
Yours, probably. It's journalist extraordinaire, and he's currently writing a new book.
Who knew?
Which we're going to talk about a little bit later on. It's Nick Trepanic.
Hi, how you doing?
Hello, everyone. How are we?
I'm all right, yeah.
Good. Now, Nick.
Do you notice, by the way, that yet another manager got sacked after losing to the Albie? The Crawley Town manager got... after losing the Sussex Senior Cup final. It's outrageous.
It's good.
Losing to us is such an embarrassment that everyone gets sacked when it happens.
With all due respect, you should be beating teams like Brighton.
Yeah. But, Nick, I have to start the show with this, because on a visit to
whose teeth do you have in today, mate?
Oh, yeah, I'm broken.
Take your notes and read them to him?
But, Nick, on a previous visit to Raw Towers, not this one, you exclaimed, "It's not fair! It's our turn!" Well, Nick, it's our turn.
Yes, finally, yes. And so I can go to places like Bournemouth without the simmering resentment that I've felt every time I set foot in the Vitality Stadium or whatever it's called.
Oh, then I feel pretty resentful going to Bournemouth.
Yeah, oh, well, I'll certainly feel resentful going to Bournemouth next season if I'm missing an Albion home game or, well, any Albion game. So I might sort of take a sabbatical next year and or retire early and just spend the time watching the Albion.
Have they updated their ground yet?
Updated in the sense of making it more than 11,000?
Yes.
It's still as small as it was. I think the floodlights are slightly better, but... No, it's... the one thing you can say about Bournemouth and their experience...
I can say several things, believe me.
Well, this is something for us to think about next season. The crowd is relentlessly positive. I mean, I've seen them turned over by a few teams in the last couple of seasons, but the fans don't get on the... Oops! The fans don't get on the players' backs. You know, they cheer from minute one. Some of the sort of G-ing up of the crowd by the, you know, the PA guys are a bit embarrassing. I'm hoping Richie Rounds won't do anything like that. But I suppose it's possibly because there is only 11,000 of them in there. It's the hardcore.
Yes.
Talking about Bournemouth hardcore makes any sense. But that's something for us to think about, you know, when we've got 30,000 in the Amex. Really get behind the guys and, you know, and give them absolutely every push on that they can get.
Well, I mean, we're not massive fans of Bournemouth, obviously, but I mean, to give them their due, they've not really struggled in that league.
No, and part of the fact is how many appalling teams have been in there for the last two seasons. I'm looking at next season and thinking who are going to be, you know, the Sunderlands of this season. But I think it would be just our luck if there aren't sort of three obviously weak teams. But you know, well. It's going to be about what we do, and you know we know that we have to do enough to finish above three, possibly, you know, four teams, and that's no doubt what we're trying to do.
Well, I look at that league, and there is nothing really to be scared of. I mean, obviously you've got it's a lots of mini leagues within one league, isn't it? Really, and it's like it's not a level playing field at all.
You're confident of turning West Brom and Stoke over in as if they kind of sort of, you know, they're you know Premier League, you know. Regulars now. I mean, they've gone there, been there, seen it, got the T-shirt, know how to survive, and will forever be sort of hunting that 10th place every year.
Well, there's only one team called Albion now, and that's us. Right.
It's not those teams. I think it's teams like Watford, you know, who maybe will have gone as far as they can go with their current sort of system. It's, you know, we'll beat teams, you know, we might get a win against someone like West Ham, having one of their many off days, those unpredictable teams. I think the Stokes and West Broms are very sort of consistent in their level of performance. So there are more erratic teams, you know, who might finish, you know, higher on those teams on a given day that will be beatable if we play to our maximum.
By the way, if you can hear a racket outside, it's not AD trying to drum out a beat on the table. We're at the open market. We're live today, and they've got all sorts of carnival things going on here.
It's the Brighton Festival.
Yeah. It's the Brighton Festival, but I think.
Well, we're hoping there's not going to be fire alarms this week.
Note to the directors here: can we soundproof the studio a little better?
Right. There is an elephant in the room, and it is the fact.
Not that big.
And it is the fact that we didn't get to lift the trophy last Saturday against Bristol City. Now, there is an argument that if we'd have just treated it as just another game and didn't have all the pomp and ceremony and streamers and flags and everything. In fact, I was at a meeting earlier this week and they said they might not do it again because our record every time we do have the flags is appalling. Did it get into the players' mindsets that it was already a job done?
I thought it got into the Bristol City players' heads, actually. I was just above the players' tunnel in the press box as they came off after their warm-up and all the flags were waving. You looked at them and you thought, these guys fancy this, they're gonna ram all this down our throats. And, of course, it didn't help us that they still needed a point. I was looking with dismay in the press room at all the other results coming in and thinking, oh, gosh, you know, why couldn't Blackburn have lost and just, you know, Bristol City would have felt they were safe and they might have just eased off a bit, never going to happen. And, of course, once, you know, they realised that we weren't quite at it, they knew 3 points were there. And I have to say, Bristol City deserved what they got.
No, but Al, we just never got going, did we?
No, I've no idea why. We have several ideas why, but you couldn't actually prove any one of them, outright. It was pretty much 11 players. It was like, I'll tell you what it was like. It was probably like your last pre-season match. They're sort of still getting used to each other, still working out who's doing what, because, you know, the quality of the passing was poor. There was people on different wavelengths. There was people doing things that they shouldn't have been doing. For me, the only one person turned up and actually sort of made a fist of the whole thing, and that was Dale Stevens. Yes, Stockdale had a good game. Dunk had a decent game. But, you know, the rest of them, I'm going to zero in on him. I have no idea what Behram Kayal was doing. Skalak is, I was got a bit previous, I'm afraid, for having sort of quiet, almost irrelevant games.
It was a strange team selection, though, wasn't
it? There is a consideration about the squad rotation. I'm not sure what it's all about. The whole thing of the players needing a rest is usually the biggest argument for a squad rotation. But if you think, okay, well, I know this, you know, if Chris thinks, oh, I know this player could play particularly better against this particular type of midfield, then maybe he can do that. But the whole notion of keeping the shirt doesn't sort of seem to apply to him.
Skalak did have our only shot in the first half. He actually looked as if he thought, oh, you know, come on, let's inject some energy. And he had a bit of a run and a shot at the keeper. If he'd fumbled, you know, would have presented to Glenn Murray. But then, of course, he got a stupid booking just before half-time that must have made Chris Hughton's mind up about taking him off. Kyle, I don't think he's been the same player since he came back from his injury, and maybe he came back too quickly and maybe needs a whole, you know, pre-season to be back to the player we know he can be.
It does say something that your man of the match is a player that wasn't even in the matchday squad. And that was Sam Bulldog. It was crying out for him, wasn't it?
Well, no, Dale Stevens had a very good game. I mean, I thought, you know, he did his and Kyle's job, and I think just about everyone was realising, well, he was the only one that was, you know, he was bossing them. You know, I was bossing their midfield as well. I mean, he was doing the job, but, you know, once he then offloaded the ball to someone, yeah, this is a game too far without Bulldog. I'm hoping he's ready. I mean, even if it means, you know, wheeling him out on a wheelchair at Villa Park in order just to do some bit of running around, because what I felt with Hemed and Murray as well, Hemed just wanted to throw himself to the ground every 2 minutes. That was just appalling. And Murray just looked like he wanted to lamp the nearest person to him every 5 minutes.
Knockhart looked like he was more interested in arguing with the referee and trying to get defenders booked than actually trying to go past them. I think it's usually if a defender kicks you, the best response is to humiliate him and, you know, beat him and get a cross in or make an assist. But I don't know, Knockhart, you know, it's easy to talk about, oh, you know, I'm desperate to do this, desperate to win the league. But when it comes to it, didn't look that desperate to me.
No.
I don't want to point any fingers at Chris Hughton on this one. But it was all very, very one-dimensional, and they kept on trying to do the same thing time and time again, which clearly wasn't working. It didn't appear to be a plan B.
It's not even that. I mean, even the whole notion of, you know, the crosses were coming in, and often we do quite well with a cross. You know, Murray can be there, Hemmer can be there. But there was times, you know, the crosses were coming in. They'd either A, not get past the first player. And I go back to Preston away. We were just putting in crosses after cross, and each and every one was just either way over hit or being knocked out by the first one. And even if it did miss the first defender, there was one person in the box. Now, I mean, and Bristol City did defend very deep, so we had a lot of the ball. We just didn't, you know how to carve them open. There was a, you know, the midfield was sitting back 10 yards. You think, well, if we want to get a goal, then push forward. We, you know, if it's in the last 10 minutes, we'll risk a second goal being scored against us, but go forward 10 yards, support the forwards. You know, it's whatever it is, everything was just so totally disjointed. I mean, the players could actually come back and say, we don't know how this happened or why it happened, fine, but this is what did happen.
Mm. I also think Bristol City are a potentially decent team, and I think they've been cheating somewhere along the line, because I've seen them a couple of times. I saw them win 4-0 at Fulham, and I thought, wow, this is a team that could do something. And you think all those goals Tammy Abraham has scored, and yet, you know, they've been struggling for most of the season, and they shouldn't have been. And I think they
made Lee a blinding Johnson, start to the season.
Lee Johnson must be, you know, wondering where all that all those performances and the 4-0 against Huddersfield, where were they when, you know, they were really in the mire in mid-season?
I was about to say, because like I said, they started the season really well, and I hadn't sort of spent my time looking at the table, but we sort of below the top six, and Bristol City certainly flirting there in the first part of the season, and so I was actually a little bit surprised to see them in the relegation. This is what happens when you don't look at the table, but I was quite surprised to see them, you know.
I believe the term is mid-season slump.
Yeah, it was a crash and burn, actually, by the looks of things. And to be fair, for to Lewis Duncan, I'm not sure if he played actually down at Ashton Gate, but in both games, whoever it was in defence, kept Tammy Abraham very, very quiet. For all the fact he's a goal scorer and he's got his 20 goals or whatever it is, and he's
in a struggling side.
In a struggling side, I thought actually that, you know, he was shepherded quite well in both games.
Well, Tammy just got a pay rise, apparently. He's now Chelsea were so impressed with his performances, they've doubled his money.
And they'll be looking to loan him to a Premier League club next season.
Would you take him?
Not sure.
Depends. I think he's not the sort of super upgrade on Sam Baldock that we're looking at. He's not that sort of player. I think that's the urgent positional sort of improvement we need, and one which we didn't make last summer and somehow still got promoted. So I think we're overdue a second striker upgrade.
Well, we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show, but first we've got to finish talking about this game, and it was all about the one goal that was scored, and Bong just got sucked inside, didn't he?
I beg your pardon?
Well, Bong got sucked inside, and no one covered the space, allowing City time and space to pick out Brownhill, whose header was unchallenged.
Well, I think it was more of the fact that actually Lewis Dunk lost the ball, or lost the aerial challenge in midfield. His man went flying past him, and Dunk realised he had to get back sharpish and just didn't do so in time. There is that thing about making sure you stop crosses at source. I mean, it did for us against Leeds. You know, they're one threat. They're and Leeds, face it, are a one-man team. By the way, when was it that we could actually officially start laughing at Leeds? I assume that we could have already started by now.
Are they leaving it late to hunt us down? That's for sure.
Yeah. They are. Are they still automatic promotion candidates?
Well, the problem is with all these teams, you know, as soon as they sound off in the media, and I don't think it was Gary Monk or the players, but it was all the hangers-on around Leeds United, the ex-players, you know, and the media up there who just love to hear the sound of their own voices. It was them saying it. But, you know, they won one more game since they said that. And Huddersfield, as soon as Wagner talked about us, you know, possibly choking, his team's just started choking.
Well, to be honest, he's got a point. We're just doing it after we got promoted.
Yeah, I don't think that was his point.
Well, as soon as Chris Hughton said we had to get used to losing as a Premier League club, then we took him at his word rather too literally.
We have, yeah. Sorry, what was your question earlier? Your last one, I can't remember, was...
Oh, it was the Bristol City goal, and it was unchallenged.
It was unchallenged, yeah. It's stopping crosses at source, yeah, the fella ghosted in ahead of the goalkeeper. Again, that's another thing we didn't do. If the crosses are coming in and being beaten by the first defender or the fella at the near post, get across him, you know, get across the keeper, get across the defender. Make sure that you're there to get the ball.
It was just a case of all
moan,
the...
Moan, 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 moan,
moan. The sort of thing that Henry was trying to do early in his career, which he hasn't been doing recently.
Yeah. We're doing the trailer for next season.
I think that's what you just said.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's... what was I going to say? I mean, it was... We did all the things that we've done well all season. We've... the basic errors that haven't really been there. It was there.
It wasn't even so much the error. I mean, it's
turned
off.
Yeah,
there was, you know, the passes. There actually wasn't that many passes went astray into touch or anything like that. It's the quality up front. You know, the support wasn't there. We're expecting Marion Hemmer to do all the work. And actually, it's interesting. I know he probably did it in jest, but it's interesting. The Players Award, Stockdale's, you know, they had a quick natter with him on stage. And he was lampooning Glenn Murray for the fact that Sam Baldock is the one that does all the running around, you know. And he runs so much, you know, he has to be quick because he said he's the one that has to go running past Anthony Knockhart. And there's an element of in vino veritas here because, you know, in relative terms, Murray and Hemmett are very, very static. Whereas Baldock, you know, the intelligent runs off the ball that we just don't get when he's not. There is no one who does that. Mm. You know, you'd like to think that someone like Murphy would be a bit cute about it. Even Solly March might be cute about it. But it's only Baldock that does that. And for one person in the squad to do that, and they're not playing, you're going to miss them.
Well, Sam Baldock has been that player, and it has been for a couple of years, but it's largely gone unnoticed. He does a lot of the really hard, dirty work for all the other strikers to claim all the glory. He has actually added goals to his game.
I was about to say, you notice it when he scores. You know, before that, it's all, what did he do? He just runs around. I mean, this whole thing of he runs around a lot.
One of those players that you notice when he's not there. Yeah, that's absolutely. when you understand what he brings to the team that obviously the people have to play instead of him don't. I mean, he's tried Hemmett there, he's tried Murphy there, he tried Solly March there against Cardiff, and none of them have quite the understanding of the role that Baldock does, you know, because that is his role in a team.
Mm. He'll find the space, he knows where, you know, everyone is, he looks around. It's interesting that he has the knack of doing that, and the others, for whatever reason, haven't learned it or haven't or don't do it. Possibly they're not told to do it, or even more specifically, told not to do it. It's the fact he does it, and he does it well. This is where, you know, these last few games of the season, yeah, we've won a lot. We've only lost the last couple, but we've won a lot. But it's been so noticeable without Sam Baldock.
Absolutely. Okay, one thing before we move on. I mean, we never really looked like scoring apart from one chance that Hunemeyer had when he headed wide when unmarked. But we seem to have this reluctance to shoot.
I noticed you're getting stroppy about this. I think
Dale Stevens is particularly guilty of this. The amount of time that he has the option to shoot and he doesn't, he looks to like pass instead.
I'm not going to chastise him for that because you said this after the game at the time, and there were times when you think, it crosses through your mind, have a shot, and you realise no, he is either too far out, or B, he knows he's got someone closing
this
him down.
This has been right on the edge of the box when the opportunity opens up for him to shoot.
Sometimes you get a lucky rebound.
Yeah, exactly, and you can see the players looking there, and they're ready for a ricochet or a rebound. Mm. And it's, you know, we don't do it. We haven't done it all season. Really. The only person who is prepared to shoot from distance is actually Knockhart, and sometimes it ends up in row Z. But I mean, you know, we should shoot more.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
I absolutely agree. I've been looking back over a lot of Albion stuff for the, over the last two seasons, and you know, goals scored by Stevens, you know, running onto to rebounds or knockdowns at the edge of the box and, you know, disappearing there. But trouble, of course, it's all very well doing that if you're counter-attacking, but there was never a chance we could be counter-attacking against Bristol City because apart from once they didn't really attack.
No. Well, ironically, Stevens has scored one goal this season and it was a shot from distance and it went in the top corner, so, you know.
That doesn't mean to say that every time he's on the edge of the area, he's in a position to shoot. It doesn't work that way, but I take your point.
I understand that, but there are times when the opportunity arises and it's not taken, he's always looking to pass it on rather than take it on himself these days, which he wasn't doing when he first signed for us.
Well, I think goals from midfield, meaning central midfield, Kyle and Stevens, they should be two of our extra weapons. But has Kyle scored this season? Not sure.
I don't think he has, and Stevens has got one.
Kyle has scored this season.
Did Stevens score at Blackburn as well as at Wigan?
No, it was at Wigan. But no, Kyle has scored this season, but it was in the FA Cup.
Yes, he has. Yeah, and that was from the AGM.
But I mean, you know, I mean, we can't. I mean, we're just being petty, really.
No, it's not petty. No, it's important.
We want more.
Well, no, it's right though. The goals from central midfield. We've had our goals have come from Murray, Hemmett, and Knockhart, which is great. We've got three players who are doing that, and
Baldock.
Baldock to a lesser degree.
Four players in double figures for the season.
Is that in league goals or is that all goals?
That's in all goals. Is that and league goals? Sorry.
It's just in league goals. Okay, so we've got four strikers, but we've also got Solly March, who should be weighed in with a few more. All right, he's mostly there for assists. like I say, the central midfield of Kyle, Stevens, Sidwell and Norwood, or you know, any combination of them, I couldn't tell you now, I'm sure someone who's listening in can, but if it's as many as five between the four of them, I'd be surprised.
And defenders. I mean, you think that Calderon used to get goals. Bruno mm-hmm. has scored goals in the past, but not this season. Duncan, Duffy, you'd think, you know, the two of those would have weighed in with six or seven between them. But yeah. Left backs don't score goals for us, it seems.
No, it's been a while, hasn't it? Wayne Bridge was probably the last one who really...
Didn't Stephen Ward score at Nottingham Forest?
Yes, he did. Before,
yeah. Well, Steve Moores did score a few.
Yeah, he started turning up from set plays.
Are you actually going to count all the goals from midfield here?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway. No, we've scored, like I say, there's probably a couple of goals from corners. I mean, last year, if I recall rightly, we were getting quite a few.
Yeah, Duffy scored at Brentford, Dunk scored at home to Norwich.
And Duffy scored against Blackburn, lots. I think he's probably the top scorer against Blackburn this season.
Yes.
Yeah, it's they haven't weighed in enough. And I think actually, for the most part, actually, apart from the corners that go to the back post, the majority of them have been very, very poor.
Mm. Oh. Well, you know,
apart from the one at Birmingham at the end of the game.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, we've got another chance to get that silverware tomorrow or yesterday, depending on when you're listening to this. but it was just so frustrating because you could see the trophy in the TV.
I hadn't noticed it there.
And, you know, it was really... And then I was just absolutely drained at the end of it.
I think everyone was so flat. Well, the point is that absolutely everyone had built up to it. You don't want to blame the club, but, you know, all the media, all the club, the play, you know, it was the big party atmosphere. It reminds me, actually, for those that are old enough to remember it, that there's an air of the Sheffield rally ahead of the general election in 1992. Mm. Labour had this massive... They thought they were going to win it. They had this big rally. It was a ridiculous pomp and American style thing, and of course what happened is that, you know, Conservatives came in and nicked it. There was an air of that. It was, you know, the flag, it's great that players, you know, the fans got behind the flags and that everything was ready.
I mean, it looked amazing. I mean, the streamers, it was,
but if
it was
you ever wanted awesome, but if you yeah, but if you ever wanted a team talk for Bristol City, that was it.
Yeah, I know, if we just treated it like a normal game, I'm sure we would have had a bit different result.
I think the negativity is over the top. I think, you know, Benitez has been full of all this. Well, you know, the main aim was promotion and to get 10 away wins or some ridiculous stat he'd read. He's putting a very positive spin on it and making out that they've done everything brilliantly. And that's probably the way to do it. You know, for Sidwell to come out, as he did in the players' tunnel afterwards, and say, it's put a damper on the whole season. We've just been promoted to the Premier League. We'd achieved our main aim and the aim we've had for the last God knows how long. We've done something that we could only have dreamt of at the Hereford game or when we were, you know, playing at Gillingham. And, you know, let's just, you know, rein it in a bit, please.
Well, you know, I've been...
No, we demand.
I'm not unhappy with what we've got.
I've been saying all season, the Bearded Bees will lift the trophy at Villa Park. So there we go. It's going to happen. Right, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm here with Alan Wares and Nick Trepanic, and we are brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com, and we have a shirt of the week for you, which I'm just passing over to Nick here. If you could just describe this one for me.
Ooh. Well, it's a deep ultramarine by Eria, a manufacturer we know well, with a sort of sky blue and white band down the left side, as worn, right side as we're looking at it, and that would be a dolphin.
It looks like it's either a dolphin or a holly leaf that's not particularly...
It's holly leaf with an eye.
Yes. Can you read the badge?
Come on. It's not quite clear enough.
No, I can't. No, he's deliberately blurred.
Has a look of something like a North American Soccer League shirt, except, of course, the NASL logo isn't there.
Yes.
Area?
No, go on. I'm going to throw it and say it's someone Greek.
You would be incorrect, Mr. Wares.
Cypriot?
No. Well, I did mention to you earlier before we came on air that it's topical. So here you go. And it's in the news for all the wrong reasons this week. But Italian side, Pescara Calcio, have some wonderfully designed shirts, both past and present. And this is their away shirt from 2012 to 2013. They're known as the Delfini, which translates as the Dolphins. And they play at the... 20-
leaves.
They play at the 20,515 capacity Stadio Adriatico in the Abruzzo region of east coast of Italy. Their manager is Zdenek Zeman, a Czech-Italian serial football manager. He has no history as a player, but has managed 23 sides since beginning his career in 1974 as coach of Palermo. During that time, he's managed, amongst others, Roma, Lazio, Fenerbahce, Napoli, Red Star Belgrade, and he's also had a song written about him. He's been the subject of a cartoon character and been the basis of a famous comedic character in Italian TV. All in all, then, something of a cult figure in Italian football, transcending club rivalries, perhaps the equivalent of Barry Fry. But there you go.
That's Pescara, is it?
That's it. And I mean, it's something which we do need to discuss, really, because, I mean, how can the Italian authorities sit back and allow what happened there to happen? I mean, Nick, I mean, you know, obviously know what's happened there this week. If you could just recap that.
This is the Montari incident. Montari complained to the referee that he was being racially abused and was booked for his trouble, and then quite legitimately, I think, decided to walk off. And the referee waved a red card in his direction as he did so. And then the authorities tried to ban him, and they've now seen sense and overturned that. But, you know, it's not... Italian football has got a problem here, and has a lot of Southern European football. And for the authorities not to back the player in that situation is just absolutely shameful. And you would expect, or you would hope, that UEFA would you know, come have a word with the Italian authorities and say something. But of course, UEFA's own record is not great. You know, I think it was some derisory fine for the Serbian FA, I believe, after.
I think it was less than Manchester City fans booing the Champions League anthem. Yeah, it's pitiful, and this is also at the time, well, a year after FIFA disbanded its anti-racism task force, feeling the work had been done. You know, it's I can only assume that was a sop to, you know, that sort of
the
culture.
Sadly, in parts of Southern Europe, that work is never going to be done.
No,
I mean, there are entrenched attitudes and there's entrenched ignorance, and it's going to take a very long time for that to be completely excised. You know, and in parts of Iberia as well, and, you know, the Balkan nations, and I have to say, sadly, you know, my ancestry in parts of Eastern Europe as well. You know, we hope against hope that the Russian World Cup isn't going to be, you know, disfigured by this, but yeah, but you just know it is. What the official accounts of it, and, you know, the actual if FIFA observers looking the other way are going to make of it, but we know it'll be out there.
I was about to say, I mean, that thing that I kind of feel in the task force was the fact that it was disbanded as a sop to the Russian FA or to Russian culture. Yeah, knowing full well that, you know, their progressive, enlightened view of multiculturalism and racial harmony is... Oh, hang on, no, this is Russia, sorry.
Yes. On the bright side, we know that Putin's not going to start World War III until they've had the World Cup in Russia. He's not going to pass up a PR opportunity like that.
Yeah, and I think sort of the chances of it actually ever happening will be receded a whole lot more should Russia actually win.
Yes, I think that might be a very good, politically a very good outcome. But,
yeah, quite.
You mean Russia aren't going to win it? I thought they'd already bought it.
Let's just see how they're
going. Let's just say, yeah.
Bought it in one sense, yes. There's another way. Well, you know, referees will be under unique pressures, shall we say, and
Well, it reminds me of the stories you used to hear about, you know, in the fledgling World Cup in 1934 and 1938. I can never remember which one. I think the third one, 1938, was in Italy. It was Mussolini that was actually choosing the referees, and he'd wine and dine them, especially for those that were refereeing the Italy games. And you read the stories and you realise just how it wasn't even, you know, beyond bent. So
Well, Italian football being bent, surely not.
Shocking.
No.
Who knew?
Revelations here.
Just in case anyone from Italy is listening in, and yes, our lawyers are on the case, and actually we'll probably stand by what we say, because you try unproving it.
It's been proved to the court.
What's his face? Paolo Rossi had three years out of the game immediately before the 82 World Cup for taking bribes, or for, I can't remember if it was bribes
match,
or betting.
Yeah, match fixing in a game when he scored two goals, actually. But that's careful disguise.
It is, actually, yeah. But, you know, he came back.
Think about that.
Yeah, he came back, and Italy were dreadful in the first part of their group game, managed to get through drawing all three matches. And then Paolo Rossi came alive in that. And yeah, so such is the healing nature of being battered. No, it's not.
Well, the Italian side, they had this thing, well, I haven't had it for a while, but of having like players just explode from nowhere. I mean, Toto Scarlatti was no one ever really heard of before that World Cup.
Well, not until he played at the Goldstone ground.
Did he?
Pretty certainly played at the Goldstone that day, so yeah.
I can remember Ravanelli playing with Dean. That was.
No, that was. I think it was him running up and down the touchline by the sandpit. What the hell am I doing here? Kind of thing.
Well, it would have felt like home. It's just like Siena's.
Probably saying this is nicer than Middlesbrough.
Yeah. Probably. Okay. Nick Trepanic is with us, and Nick, you've got a book. Well, you're currently writing a book at the moment, so we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But obviously, us achieving promotion to the Premier League is a massive thing for you professionally. So, from a professional perspective, how excited are you about next season?
I am excited, but the problem is, of course, as a freelancer, that Premier League games tend to be much more frequently covered by the full time staff of newspapers. So I'm optimistic
looking
about
for a gig.
well, yeah, I've been there, done that. I'm optimistic that there will be plenty of work going, and of course every press conference we hold will be of much more interest to the national papers, and so if they like to keep on holding them at 9 o'clock, which is far too early for people to drive down from London, then that's brilliant news.
Right.
The agency I work for, because the head of the agency also works in, or the football editor of the agency also works in Brighton, so he might send himself to all the Brighton home games and pack me off to Bournemouth, but I might take my sabbatical and just say I'm sorry, I'm unavailable on the Saturdays when the Albion are at home. Might actually be able to use my own season ticket for a bit.
I've got to say, I've got to ask, how has Brighton's elevation to the Premier League been viewed by your fellow scribes?
I think most people are very, very happy about it. Even one or two who are support that lot up the road. I think they realise that, you know, we've been horribly unlucky in recent times, particularly last season, and they think, you know, it's overdue. It is actually our turn. Everyone likes going to, you know, decent facilities and sitting in reasonable comfort. If they find themselves in the overspill at the back of the west stand upper next season and they have to go up there without a lift, they might not be quite so well disposed to us. But no, I think it's known as a club that looks after the press very well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, having been to some of the press facilities at other grounds throughout the country, I mean, ours is just like...
Oh, it's luxury.
I've got to go to Brentford again tomorrow.
I wasn't going to mention Brentford, but we went to Brentford.
Brentford.
Yeah, it's, that room, their press room is probably not much bigger than this studio, is it? Fat people need not apply.
No. And the other thing about the Albion is that the geography of the stadium means that... whereas at places like Southampton, the players can be kept away from the journalists. Assuming they don't change things too much next season, then the journalists will be walking past players on their way to the press interview room. So I think they'll be, as at Bournemouth, I think they'll be very happy with the chance to speak to players after the game, which is not quite so easy at other grounds.
But there's been some talk in the national press about a very southern bias towards the Premier League next year. Obviously Sunderland have already gone.
It's just the way it is, isn't it?
Middlesbrough are going to be gone today.
But Newcastle are going up, so...
No, the membership of the top division has fluctuated wildly. I did a bit of research on this once, and if Preston had beaten West Ham in the playoff final a few years ago, the north-south divide... In between the north half of the Premier League and the southern half would have been in Stanley Park, Liverpool. But so Everton would have been in the northern half and Liverpool would have been in the southern half. So that was how northern the Premier League could have got at that point. The other extreme, the north-south divide, was, I think, between Luton and Coventry, I think in 1990, when there were... eight Premier League clubs in top division clubs in London plus Southampton.
Yeah.
Well, there was that thing this year, wasn't there, in the not the JPT, the Checker Trade Trophy this year when they were doing North and South, and Shrewsbury were in the same group as Colchester. I think
Cambridge played Hartlepool or something.
Season when all the four London clubs south of the river were in the top division: Charlton, Millwall, Crystal Palace and Wimbledon were all in the top division, and that was, you know,
if the form is any guide, then Fulham will be joining us next year as well.
Yeah.
So do you know where the north south? Have we worked out where that would be then? In that case, if we're talking about the big if.
Well, the Midlands is pretty underrepresented at the moment, isn't it?
So West Brom and Stoke, isn't it?
We're between West Brom and Leicester or something like that.
Yes. Yeah.
So what are you most looking forward to next season?
Seeing as many Albion games in the Premier League, you know, but don't care. I saw every home game the previous time we were up, apart from one when a friend ridiculously decided to get married.
Idiot.
On the day of the last home game of the first season. It was a goalless draw against Everton. So you could say I didn't miss much, but it really annoys me that I missed one game in four seasons of the home games. Got a lot of the away games, you know, as well. Saw us win at, you know, Tottenham and those places, and didn't see us win at Arsenal, but, you know, and went to Anfield, and it's brilliant. And I'm pleased for all the fans, you know, to be able to go to Goodison Park and... Well, I doubt if I'll get to those because, you know, obviously working on Saturdays, which I will have to do.
It's funny you should say that because it's like I've been looking into this week, and I was looking because promotion to Premier League, everyone was like, oh yeah, we can go here and then we can go there. And it's like, oh, hang on, we were there not long ago. So, I mean...
There's not many new places.
I've got a list here of when we last played every club we're going to be playing next year.
And I think probably the furthest back one, I'm going to guess here, I think it's Everton, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. We last played Everton on the 9th of April, 1983.
Yeah.
It's my favourite Premier League ground.
Because
it's so old-fashioned. It's got you know, those fantastic old Archibald Leach stands. It's surrounded by terraced housing. You've got that church in the corner, and they've got this sort of Everton programme sales on, and you can go and get a cup of tea and a bun for almost nothing. No, it's just a fantastic old-fashioned ground, soon to be replaced, sadly, but I always love going there.
It's the one I'm really looking forward to next season, because, like I said, we've not played them since 1983.
Yeah, nice club, but, you know, good people, fantastic.
I mean, we're talking competitive games here, but who's the next one on the list?
Oh, I'd have to say...
As a ground or a club to visit?
A club we've played in a competitive fixture.
I'd say Chelsea.
You're right.
Cool.
You're right.
We
haven't played Chelsea in a competitive fixture since the...
1989.
15th of March, 1989, yeah. And then after that...
I would say this. Every season that we've played Chelsea in the league, they've won that division that year. In other words, all two seasons. That's all we've ever had. Well, the first time they played... Well, I'm talking about in the league here. They played in the cup, but the first time they came down in the league, they came down and totaled the place. So, unpleasant memories.
But, I mean, other than Everton...
West Brom we haven't played for a while, I wouldn't have
thought. West Brom we haven't played since the 3rd of April, 1993. Man United we haven't played in the competitive fixture since the 23rd of January 1993. So it was apart from those ones, everyone else we've played in this century.
Oh, really? Okay. Yes.
So, but I mean, they're new grounds for people to visit. You know, the Etihad
and a lot for them, and the Amex is a lot for them. But actually, there's, even then, probably of the Premier League clubs, I wouldn't mind betting there's about six or seven that have already played at the Amex.
Liverpool, Arsenal,
Burnley. Well, Chelsea have, but that was a friendly. Yeah. Palace, Bournemouth, Hull, Leicester, Southampton.
Have we ever played at Spurs, the current Swansea ground?
Yes, yeah.
Have we?
I haven't got Swansea on the list because obviously they're probably
going, aren't they? So they might be missed.
So yeah, no. Burnley, Palace, Bournemouth, Hull, Leicester, Southampton, Watford, West Ham and Newcastle have all played at the Amex, yeah.
All right.
Apparently, according to this list, we played Newcastle in the 28th of February 2017. Did you know that?
Hmm.
There you go. But it's going to be exciting, I guess, but playing Stoke away is not...
If I hear that song one more time...
It's a beautiful walk down the canal towpath, and there's a narrow boat selling oatcakes just level with the Britannia Stadium. If we're lucky enough to play them early in the season or late when it's still possible to get down there in daylight, then it's all right.
It is the kind of standard unit of measurement for sort of English drabness when you think... Well, in the top division, it's Stoke away. If any further down, it's Grimsby away.
The way I look at these things, it's like, how easy is it to get to from Chester? That's bad.
All right. Okay, well, Stoke is probably not too bad. Sorry, can I just get back to a point about people getting married during the season? I only ever missed it with Dean, I think, about five or six home games in all the 12 years we were there. But one I did miss was due to a wedding. And that was, thankfully, that game against Walsall. where they were down to nine men, and we couldn't do anything with it. Yeah. And if people say to me, oh, and you've just done it, was it really that bad?
Yes. For me, the one...
Clayton Ince was great that day.
The one I always remember is the 4-3 defeat by Rochdale when we were 3-2 up and lost. And it was absolutely teaming down. It was like watching water polo.
I think that was the
worst. From inside the pool.
Yes. That was the worst the rain ever was.
Swindon playoff.
No, that wasn't too bad.
It wasn't during the game, but it was before the game.
There was a game against Derby, I remember. I think it was the game where Kerry Mayo scored the winner. But Nick, I mean, you did say you are writing a book. So tell us about that and what it's all about.
Well, surprisingly,
Has it got a happy ending?
It has, yes. The team it's about get promoted to the Premier League for the first time since 1983. Yeah, I assumed that the Albion would be producing a book, and so I sort of approached them and wondered if they had anyone to write the copy. And to my amazement, I found that they hadn't planned such a book. I think there is something in production, but not that sort of thing. And so they said, well, if you're planning to write a book, we'll help out and we'll give you access to players and coaches, and it won't be an official book, but it'll be sort of as semi-official as it can get. And Paul Hazlewood, the club photographer, will be doing the photographs. And you think, well, do you start at Hereford? You know, do you start with just this season? Do you start with the Sheffield Wednesday game? I decided to start at the beginning of Chris Hughton's first full season. So how he changed, from that team that was fighting relegation to the team that nearly did it. So it covers the Shoreham air disaster and the near miss against Middlesbrough and Sheffield Wednesday, then rebuilding the confidence and then going again. So, I mean, I've spoken to, players, I've spoken to some of the most interesting things is behind the scenes people like Paul Winstanley, the head of recruitment, and they've got a couple of great stories about some of the signings, particularly Shane Duffy and Anthony Knockhart. The way they go about, checking players out and how long they look at players before they make a signing. And I can tell you now, anyone we sign will not be on the basis of some chance phone call from an agent. Whoever we sign, we've been looking at since New Year, I'm pretty sure. They've had two lists, one in case of promotion and one in case promotion wasn't delivered. And, at the moment, they will be looking at the top end of that list they've got.
Well, of course, if promotion hadn't been achieved, then we would have been looking probably at quite a big exodus.
I was about to say a huge, squad acquisition, because a lot of people... I mean, they'd have probably had a decent war chest as well, though.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there are certain people who are out of contract that we wouldn't have got anything for, but, if you'd had to sell or chosen to sell someone like Lewis Dunk, he would command a pretty decent price. I think... Liam Rossini said when I was interviewing him, for a guide to the players for the Times for the following day after the Wigan game, he said Lewis Dunk will play for England, and that he was unequivocal about it. He says, other players like Michael Keane have gone up and done it. Lewis Dunk is better than those players. So, that's a statement. And whether he would have been able to say something like that and boosted his value after we'd failed to go up, which luckily never happened, I don't know. But... we're not there. We're where we are, and all our difficulties this summer will be under the heading of nice problem to have.
Yeah.
And I look at Bournemouth and what they did when they went up, and they did spend a lot of money. But if you look at the players they bought, most of them were not didn't actually make the team. I think they stayed up with the nucleus of the team they already had, and that's perhaps a warning for those people who want Tony to get the credit card out and spend. It's not always, 15 million doesn't necessarily buy you a first team player. Look at Gradle at Bournemouth, and injuries happen. And
Well, I don't think wholesale tinkering is needed, and you've got to keep that nucleus together, because it's that team spirit and togetherness that has actually got us in this position in the first place. And I think that the players that have got us up deserve the opportunity to prove they can play at that level. And I certainly think most of them will be able to.
Was it a case of deserving it, and there you're getting into realms of of not fantasy, but of romanticism. There are going to be some players, and everyone, it's going to be another one of those sort of big pub conversations that you have, is who's going to be able to step up and who isn't. And you'd like to think that actually all of them have the capacity and the capability of stepping up. But it's not even sort of having the odd game now and again, it's being able to do it week in, week out. And we'd be of the opinion probably in here that at least four or five would step up without too much of a gear crunch. It's those who are more inconsistent that we'd have an issue with, or maybe even one or two might be a bit too old.
Okay, but after the game tomorrow, there will be the retained list will be released, and there are some players that are going to be out of contract. So out of those, who do you think are likely to be offered something, or because they've been part of this promotion team, do you think they'll be offered something regardless?
Well, I mean, there's the retained list is actually about those who the club is going to let go. That doesn't necessarily follow that those who are intended to be on the retained list are going to get a contract or b the offer of a contract. I mean, if we're going to look at the biggest one, the most obvious one is obviously Dale Stevens. Now, I'd imagine that the club and him have been talking for a reasonable amount of time. Certainly, now that promotion has been delivered, a reasonable amount of time about sort of sticking around. The fans have made it clear what they want from Dale Stevens. I think that may or may not have a bearing on it. You never know. I mean, it's I can imagine it would be something quite appealing to know that you're wanted at a given club, especially after all the nonsense that we had at the beginning of the season. So, the retained list is going to be sort of probably, let's put it this way, I can't believe that actually on the list would be Dale Stevens' name saying but not being offered a new contract.
The ones in danger are the likes of Gayton Bong and Steve Sidwell, aren't they?
Yeah, Sidwell obviously wants to stay because who wouldn't want a Premier League contract? I think he's made the case that his experience is important, and that's true. I've been pleasantly surprised by him this season. I thought that he might be really on his last legs, you know, given that the sort of all energy nature of his game. But you know, he's never been a player who's got a lot of pace to lose. That's a fact. Once the pace goes, there's not a lot left. But Sidwell gives you more than that, and I think they'll give him another year. I think so. But left back is such a problem position, isn't it? I mean, are they going to look at Bong and Pocagnoli and think, yeah, one of those? You know, if Pocagnoli wants to stay, he's got more. You know, he's got Premier League experience. He's also got an alarming tendency to dive in, and I think he's a yellow card waiting to happen almost every time he tackles. Bong's been an international. Is he? Sometimes he surprises you with fantastic interceptions and anticipation.
He'll either play brilliantly or maddeningly.
Yes. Marginally, yes.
The problem is, Nick, though, if you're a left back looking to sign for this club, they have to ask yourself the question: how many games is Nick Schrapanik going to watch this season? Your microphone's got Bruce Group. Because you have a record of crocking left backs, haven't you?
Yes, that's right. I mean, I was observing both Bong and Rossini's serious injuries. Not the Rossini injury at Reading, but both the ones at the Amex. So if I promise to just sort of shut my eyes when a left back is in possession or anything like that, or I could sort of hold up a card or something over that part of the pitch, you know, yes. He'd stand upper, you know, or I could just sort of lean back in my seat and I probably wouldn't be able to see that bit of the pitch. So I'll do what I can. I mean, towards the end of the season, I've had every sort of combination of lucky socks and I don't feel I've left any stone unturned in doing what I can, and then it's just out over to the guys and it's up to them. But
what a load of old twaddle!
But Nick, you watch a lot more Premier League football than both myself and Alan. So, what do you think when you look at our side now? What do you think actually needs to be a success in the Premier League?
More youth and more pace. I think we were the oldest team in the championship, and experience is great, you know, that there's no question about that, know-how and experience, but we need to get younger and we need to get faster. There's pace in different places in the team. I think we're okay. I would, if you told me that the current back four would be this back five would be the same, I wouldn't have too much of a difficulty with that. I think we need a variation in midfield, somebody a little bit faster, and probably were okay down the wings. So
when you say faster, do you mean by pace or speed of thought?
Pace. I think the brains in the midfield are good. I mean, Sidwell's got a good football brain. I'm not sure we've seen the best of Norwood. I mean, his passing might come to the fore in the Premier League. Mm. But I think, you know, we need another number, whether you want to call it another number 10 or a number 8. Somebody, you know, you can't have Baldock as being the only player who can do that in that position. So whether it's a Premier League loan or something, we need another second striker, you know, with pace and a bit of youth. And because of the prices and the fact that, you know, we're not an established Premier League club, we're probably going to have to get that in the form of a loan.
So, I mean, when you look at the side we've got now, do you think there's going to be someone in our current squad that is actually going to surprise even us next season and come to the fore?
Well, would it be a surprise if Solly March really showed what he's about? He needs to be consistent, but here's an anecdote from the book. I said to him, of course, it's very difficult to be a consistent winger. You know, I once spoke to Harry Redknapp about that, and he knows all about that as having been a winger. And he said, oh, was Harry Redknapp a winger? And that, of course, makes you feel 100 years old. but then why would Solly March know that? Why would anyone under 50 know that Harry Redknapp was a winger as a player?
I'm under 50 and I didn't know he was a winger, so there you go.
I've got to be honest with you, I didn't know he was a winger.
Well, there you go, right.
He's probably something beginning with a W, but I didn't know it was a winger.
Well, okay, yes, so let's assume that Solly March being brilliant wouldn't be that much of a surprise. The player I would like to have a chance to show what he's all about is Richie Towell. I mean, I know people who've said, you know, that he's the best player to come out of Ireland since Seamus Coleman, and I'm afraid he hasn't had a chance to show that. I think it's somewhere in there is a guy with a natural eye for goal and an ability to get forward.
But where would you play him, though? Well, I mean, he's been with us
for the number 10 role. I'm afraid he's going to have to go on loan, because although Houghton wouldn't give him a loan in January and obviously thought he had a part to play, when it came to it, he couldn't find a place for him in the team. If he stays with four two, then there isn't a place. So, you know, that puts even more importance on that number 8 role.
I mean, do you think there would have been? We've talked about this on the show before, but I mean, there was an opportunity for him to get some game time when Sam Baldock got injured, and because we knew,
he's not even making the bench, is he?
Well, no, Murray and Hemed playing together, it blows hot and cold. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Usually it doesn't. And we know that Murray likes to play alongside someone.
Well, he's mobile.
He's mobile to do the running for him. And Richie Towell would have answered that question. So, I mean, he could have had that opportunity then.
Yes, I think so. I wonder if he just sees him as a number 10, and because we didn't actually get a shape playing that role because of the Pritchard incident, that, you know, he would have been perhaps the backup to Pritchard if we'd played a number 10. I mean, I personally think there's a way to use our squad to play 4-1-4-1. Doesn't have to be the defensive formation that people think, you know, because depending on, you know, the one, then the four press further forward, and you would have Kyle and Stevens closer to Murray, you know, and two number 10s in a way. But those things never happened. You know, we stuck with 4-4-2 pretty well all the way through the season. So I think perhaps if we'd gone with a different shape, I think that would have been Towell's chance. Or if we'd gone further in the FA Cup, or if we'd been champions with two games to go, you know, we possibly would have been playing at Villa Park tomorrow.
As with the likes of Mayan Parr. And I mean, I can't help feeling that, you know, when Chris Houghton first arrived at the club, you know, someone asked him, you know, what's the formation you play? And he was fairly open and candid. And so he said, you know, I play a kind of a 4-5-1. Which he might well have tried to, if I can't remember.
We saw Baldock playing out wide, didn't we?
Yeah.
In his first sort of half season, and so that was kind of true.
That was Sammy, though.
Yeah, but the thing is, whatever it was, that come the beginning of last season, completely abandoned it for a flat 4-4-2. Evidently, you know, I mean, this is a fellow with experience in this division, but evidently felt that 4-4-2 was the way to get out of the division. It's either that, or he had to look around at who was at the club and formulated his way around the qualities of the squad rather than actually trying to get the squad
That's good, because, you know, Sammy, it's been said, you know, he was unlucky in that he never had the personnel to play the way he wanted. But what Houghton has done is looked at the personnel and think, this is the best way to play with these players, and that is a good way to be.
Okay, I mean, there was, I mentioned who could be the surprise package next year. One player
who do you reckon it's going to be?
Well, one player that is under contract, I don't think it is going to be him, but one player who is still under contract for next year is Kaz. He's still here. He's still technically, he's got another year in his contract. Could he actually...
Well, he'd be a fifth choice winger.
Well, I mean...
There's a reason why he's out on loan now. There's a reason why he's out on loan now.
That's because his head dropped.
Well, thing is, there
he's
is no
confidence player.
There is no room in this squad for that kind of attitude, is there? I mean, if the confidence. I mean, that is if we're about to say that the entire squad has been about togetherness and support and being as one, and you're saying that Kaz has got a loss of confidence, then one, what will happen is the players will rally around and say, look, come on, Kaz, you can do this, blah blah blah. But two, he's also the fact that, like I say, because he's a fifth choice when he's got Scalac, Murphy, March and Knockout all ahead of him, and he's not getting a sniff. He's lost the pace that he had from previous times, and when he's on the ball, he's not exactly a team player who go off and do his own thing, which, quite annoyingly, sometimes so can Knockout. Well, and he was rarely going to get on the bench.
Well, you just mentioned another player there, which is Yuri Scalac. Could we actually play him in his best position next year, which is actually in the centre of midfield?
Or as a number eight, which he was very played at.
He is a number eight.
Yeah,
that's what he's got in his
I mean, but does he have the pace? He's not really shown the pace to play in that role, and I think that's what we need to inject. I think that's what we need to add. Mm. You know, if we need a forward who, if he's knocked through, but can run away from defenders. Sam Baldock can do a lot of things, but I don't think even he can do that.
No. No, so it's the point about what's happened over the last 2 years is that for the most part, and if we're to choose our first 11 for the last couple of years, you know, from the players that were available in the first year and the second year, the first team is largely the same, all bar about eight or nine, two or three players. We've added Duffy and we've added Murray as regular first teamers, and that's largely it. Mm. It's the same team now. You know, Bournemouth went through the divisions with largely the same squad. They added obviously bits and pieces as they went through the divisions, but as Nick said, the nucleus of their squad was the one that actually started the Premier League.
Well, you just look at a team like Swansea and a player like Leon Britton, who no one would have thought would still be playing for them now.
Well, it's kind of a one-off, but we're talking about the entire team here, or at least the entire sort of root of the team. And you can see that there is going to have to be A, probably a little bit of tinkering, and B, an improvement in quality, I think. I mean, I remember reading reports of the Newcastle game from back in February, and saying, you know, the quality of these two sides, they'll make it the top 10 in the Premier League. Now, okay, there's some nice passing, there's some good stuff going on, and it's probably easy on the eye. But it doesn't necessarily follow that if we're playing actually Man United or we're playing or even West Brom that day, that we'd actually be able to be doing what they're doing. It's just two teams that are effectively cancelling each other out.
We have to get the ball first.
Yes.
And that is not easy. And if once you lose the ball in the Premier League, you won't see it for a long time. There's just one other player that we haven't mentioned, actually, or considered, and that's Bruno. Some people are saying, oh, you know, he's going to be 37 in the Premier League, he's going to be too old. I'm not entirely sure about that. I think he's, you know, his fitness has been fantastic. Whether he's lost perhaps not even a yard of pace or, you know, a few centimetres of pace, but... do we think that he'll be there?
Well, I think there's also the quality and the leadership that he has about him as well. I think it's not just about the fact he's going to get whooped by... And I'm trying to think of actually how many left-wingers there are in the Premier League that actually whoop his ass.
Well, Bruno's all about his quality, isn't it? And
he's better on the ball than he is off it.
We've talked about this before, it's all about having little partnerships throughout the team, and that partnership he's got with Knockout is Knockout.
Well, quite. But I think there isn't really a left-wing equivalent, though, is there?
Not really. But, I mean, that is it. That is all we've got time for this week. So, thank you to Nick Schrapanik. Thank you to Alan Wares. I'm Andy Pack, and we're going to be back with our last show of the season next week. We'll have the Albion Raw Player of the Season. We might even have a competition for you. But myself and Alan will be back next week. Let's go to Birmingham. Let's bring back that trophy. This has been the Albion Raw. We'll see you again next week. Thanks. Bye. Paper.